If you'll find the book of Hebrews in your Bible and then find the 11th chapter in Hebrews and then come down to the 29th verse, you'll be right where I'm at, and I'm going to begin with a reading of Hebrews 11, 29. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned. When I was a kid, one of the first kind of entertainments I can remember is every once in a while we'd get to go to a movie. And there were some must-see movies when I was a kid. The Wizard of Oz was probably number one. And then Ben-Hur. I can remember my dad taking me, and we went with a neighbor, Ray Rademacher, to watch Ben-Hur at the widescreen drive-in there in Rantoul. That's where the Walmart is now. But there was another movie that everybody my age wanted to see, and that was The Ten Commandments. And one of the main reasons we wanted to see it is because of the great special effect that was in that movie of the parting of the Red Sea. I tell you, if Moses didn't look like Charlton Heston, he should have. I mean, what a great guy to be Moses. But then to see that parting of the Red Sea, none of us could imagine how in the world they did that. And everybody wanted to see the Ten Commandments. Well, verse 29 of Hebrews chapter 11 is talking about that very event, only it was no special effect. It was a miracle that God performed. And we're going to look at verse 29 this morning. The first thing I would note is that we have now moved from a singular he or she, and by singular he or she I mean Abel, Enoch, Noah, Sarah. The only plural we've had to this point is in verse 23, Moses' parents. But now in verse 29, we go from the singular, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, we go from the singular examples of faith to a very large group of faith, not just a married couple. Now, in verse 29, we jump to hundreds of thousands of individuals, and they're encompassed by the pronoun, by faith, they passed through the Red Sea. We're talking about the Hebrews, the nation of Israel now. Not yet a nation, but soon to become one. So that's the first thing I would note about verse 29. The second thing I would note is that in verse 29, we're talking about something that faith produced that was obviously a miracle. Now, we've been given many examples of what faith is capable of in this chapter thus far, but many of them are things that we can do without any miracle occurring. Look at the very first one back in verse 4, where Abel worshipped by faith. Now, I hope to God this morning that's what we're doing. I hope that we are worshiping by faith this morning. But for Abel to worship by faith, there was no miracle that occurred in that. He took of the fatlings of his, the first of his flock and the fatlings thereof. He took a lamb and he killed the lamb and he prepared the lamb and he brought it as an offering to God. He did all of that without any miracle occurring. And what we've been doing this morning, we've done all of it without any miracle occurring. Unleavened bread's been made. We've got fruit of the vine. We have sang. We have prayed. Everything we've done to this point and hereafter is within our capability. We've done it all ourselves. And a lot of people think that's the way life ought always to be. Everything in life ought to be solvable based upon our own resources, based upon our own strength, our own energy. Whatever we come up against, we're the answer to our problem. The solution is within us. It would be nice if that was true in life. But that is not always true in life. There are things we come up against in life about which we can do nothing. Not only can we do nothing, nobody else can do anything. We come up to situations that are beyond our power to accomplish. And in verse 29, we're reading about something here that involved a situation like that. The Israelites, the Hebrews, were facing a situation that they could do nothing about. And we need to know what to do when we run up against a situation about which there is nothing we can do. I mean, DIY is very popular in our society. DIY, do it yourself. And so you go to Lowe's, you go to Menards, and they've got a DIY section. You don't need a plumber. You don't need a carpenter. You can do it yourself. And here are the tools. Here are the materials you need to get. Here are the instructions to do it yourself. If all of life was like that, that would be nice, but it's not. And there are situations where not even the carpenter nor the plumber can do it. When we come into a situation like that, how can faith help us? What are we to do about such situations? Henry, while you're up, would you grab my Bible there that I left on the pew that I'm going to need here in a minute? Yeah, that's it, right in front of you. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. What do we do when we can't do it ourselves? What do we do when we come up against an impossible situation? How does faith help us in a time like that? That's what we're going to be talking about here in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29. And let me give you a little preview of what's coming. In the Gospels, there was a time when Peter walked on water. Everybody's heard that story. The disciples are in a boat, they're rowing, they're not making much progress. Christ comes walking them on the water. Peter says, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come walking you on the water and I'll do it." And Christ says, "Come on, Peter." And Peter gets out of the boat and he's walking on the water. But then he started looking at the storm, the waves, the wind, and he began sinking. And Christ had to save him and get him back in the boat. We cannot walk on water by faith now. We simply cannot do it. But let me tell you what we can do by faith now. Matthew 17, verse 20. Christ said, "If you have faith that's no bigger than a grain of mustard seed." If we had a grain of mustard seed in the palm of our hand right now, we'd have to look close to see it. Christ said, if you've got that much faith, you may not be able to walk on water, but you know what you can do? You can tell a mountain that is standing in your way, "Be thou cast into the sea," and it'll happen. We might not be able to walk on the sea by faith now, like Peter was able to do, but we can throw a mountain into the sea by faith now, and that's what we're going to be studying this morning. When we come up against difficulties that are beyond our power, beyond our resources, what do we do? Okay, with that as the setup, let's get some context to the story this morning. Back in verse 27 of chapter 11, we read that Moses, and now we're reading that the entire Hebrew people forsook Egypt. They left Egypt. They forsook it. But when they got out of Egypt, they faltered. Things didn't turn out to be as rosy as they expected. They ran into some tough situations, some tough times, and that was a test of their faith, and they didn't handle the test very well. But after they faltered, they still, by faith, were able to go forward. And so they forsook, they faltered, they went forward. They forsook. They did that the night of the Passover. We talked about that last week. Within a 24-hour period, this is amazing, hundreds of thousands of people walked out of Egypt. Now, since they were slaves, they didn't have a lot to pack. They didn't have much to take. But to get that many people out of Egypt, after 430 years, God says, "I'm ready to deliver Abraham's descendants." And in a single night, Exodus 12:41 says, all the host of the Lord went out. Hundreds of thousands of people left Egypt. But then they faltered. They get outside of Egypt. And we often think that when we have a decisive victory in our life, that that success is going to be followed by other successes. How many of you, when you became a Christian, thought somehow or other all of your problems are going to disappear? I've become a Christian now. I'm a child of God. Life is going to get a lot easier. How many of you have thought that? And then you found out, no, life didn't get easier. In many ways, it got harder. That's what the Israelites found out when they forsook Egypt. And they reacted by having questions, by having doubts, by making accusations, by doing a lot of head scratching. Here are three things they had to have scratched their head about. They leave Egypt, headed for the promised land. They should have gone northeast. They were looking at the GPS on their phone, and their phone said the land of promise is northeast. God had them make a U-turn and head south in the exact opposite direction. It's a head scratcher when life doesn't take us in the direction we think we ought to be going. Number two, it's a head scratcher when they end up, following the will of God, they end up in a box canyon. Now you know what a box canyon is if you watched the westerns growing up. A box canyon is up there in the Badlands, and the outlaws are trying to get away, or the good guys are trying to get away, and they're in that maze there in the Badlands, and they go down one little road here only to find out they're boxed in. They have ran into a cul-de-sac with the hills all around them. Only one way in, only one way out. And the Indians are right behind them and they have nowhere they can go. Let me read Exodus 14, verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel. This is God talking to Moses. Speak to the children of Israel that they turn. Stop going toward the promised land. Turn around. And camp before Pi Hahiroth between Migdal and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea. What that verse means is, Moses, lead Israel to a box canyon where there's only one way in and one way out. And so they go to where God told Moses to take them. They've got wilderness on one side. They've got a sea, the Red Sea, in front of them. They've got wilderness on the other side. Only one way in and one way out. And guess who is now blocking the one way in and one way out? It's the Egyptians. Because the third head scratcher is that God says, verse 3, listen to this, Exodus 14, verse 3, for Pharaoh will say, when he hears that you're in this cul-de-sac, this box canyon, Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I, God, will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he'll chase them. I'll cause Pharaoh to think I've got them right where I want them. And I'll finish them off. You talk about three head scratchers. Heading in the opposite direction. Heading to where there's no way out and stirring up Pharaoh to go after him. Now, to understand why God did all of that, you've got to understand two things. Number one, He's going to deal with Egypt. He's setting a trap for Egypt. He's teaching Israel a lesson. And if you feel like you're boxed in, you've heard of those escape rooms? I've never been to one. You'll never catch me in one of those. I don't like stuff like that. But you can pay money and go with a group into an escape room, and they shut the door, and you've got to figure out how to get out. They give you about an hour to figure out how to get out. And thankfully, if you can't figure it out, they take pity on you and come and unlock the door and let you out. But if in life it seems like you're in an escape room, and there is no way out. What then? One of the most famous Marines to come out of World War II and the Korean War was a guy by the name of Chesty Puller. I believe he was the most decorated Marine ever. And he was at the Chosun Reservoir during the Korean War, way up north near China. MacArthur and his army had chased the North Koreans out of South Korea. They had chased them all the way up to China. There's a big reservoir up there called the Chosun Reservoir. It's the middle of winter, freezing cold. The American army is on the pursuit, and suddenly the Chinese invade from across the border. And it's not just the North Koreans they're fighting any longer. It's the Chinese by the hundreds and thousands of them. And the Marines up at the Chosun Reservoir found themselves completely cut off. Chesty Puller got his men together. He said, "The enemy is to the left of us. He is to the right of us. He is in front of us. He is behind us. He won't get away this time." That's what's happening here in Exodus 14. God's setting a trap. But to set that trap, He had to surround the Hebrews. He had to put them in a situation where there was no way out. And when the Hebrews looked around and saw there was no way out, listen to their reaction. I'm going to read from Exodus 14, starting with verse 10. "And when Pharaoh drew near, the Israelites can see the Egyptian army coming up the only way out. When he drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, "Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians"? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." They turned on Moses with a vengeance. "Why didn't you just leave us alone? Better to be a living slave in Egypt than a dead free man out here by the Red Sea." They were very afraid. Like Peter looking at the wind and the waves when he gets out on the sea, they were looking at the dangers, the problem. They were looking at the Egyptians. They were not looking at the Lord. And this, after all of the miracles that God had enabled them to see, with the plagues on Egypt, with the miracles that God gave Moses to do, with God getting them out of Egypt, having seen all that He had done, they are very afraid and they attack Moses. How much mercy do we have to see from God in our own life? How many blessings do we have to receive from Him and realize came from Him before we start trusting Him when we can't see a way out? That was the problem with the Hebrews. You see, they didn't recognize a friendly devil when they saw one. In our life, we will meet friendly devils. And we need to recognize them when we meet them. Now, what do I mean by a friendly devil? That idea is suggested by 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. Paul is in a bad situation. He describes his situation at the end of 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And in verse 12, verse 7, Paul says, "There was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me." There was given me a thorn in the flesh, something painful, something hurtful. A messenger of Satan. Satan's involved in it somehow or other. But God says that it was given him lest he be exalted over much over the revelations he had been given. God allowed allowed Paul to see heaven. And that can give somebody a big head. Hey, I've been to heaven. I've seen heaven. I know what's there. And to keep keep Paul from having a big head, giving a big head. God gave him this thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan. It was a friendly devil. It was a devil. It hurt. It was painful. He was agonizing under it. But it was friendly because it was actually an expression of God's grace, 2 Corinthians 12:9. It was meant to help Paul go to heaven. That's what a friendly devil is. God allows bad things to happen. He allows us to be put into a place where we can't find our way out. Not to curse us, not to destroy us, but to bless us. Everything from God is a good thing, James chapter 1, 17 says. And if God has led me to a box canyon, to a cul-de-sac, there is goodness there that I must look for. And I wonder how much our life would change. How our enjoyment of life, our situation in life would change. If we realize that these things in our life that we look at and we say are bad things, are things out to destroy us, are things, problems we can never get past, if we started looking at them as friendly devils that God's allowed to come into my life to help me go to heaven, how might that change our general outlook? I wonder if that would lift someone out of depression who thought everybody and everything was against them. If we saw it all as a friendly devil. So then the question is, we'll close with this, how do you handle a friendly devil? How do you handle these problems, insurmountable problems that are beyond your ability or anybody's ability to fix? Exodus 14 tells us. One verse is all we need to know what to do when we find ourselves in a situation like that. Exodus 14, verse 13. After they have turned on Moses, accused him, ready to throw him out, here's what Moses said, verse 13. Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand still. See the salvation of the Lord, which He will accomplish for you today." Don't be afraid. Stand still. See the salvation of the Lord. In those words are found the three reactions we need to have to the great difficulties of life that we might encounter. Let's talk about each one of them. Number one, do not be afraid. Fear paralyzes. Fear keeps us from movement. You've probably heard what they told those soldiers and Marines who were hitting the beaches in World War II, invading Okinawa, invading Iwo Jima, D-Day in Normandy. They told them, keep moving. If you stop on the beach, you're a dead duck. You're a sitting duck. And they'll zero those guns in on you and you'll be blown to smithereens before you know it. You've got to keep moving. But fear can cause us to seize up. I pulled down my book Friday, Goodbye Darkness, by the great American author William Manchester. William Manchester was in the 1st Marines when they landed at Tarawa. It was one of the most horrible invasions, horrible experiences in all of World War II. The Japanese had the beach zeroed in. Every gun, rifle, cannon was zeroed in on that beach. And they were tearing those boats, bringing the Marines in, and then tearing the Marines apart with the firepower they unleashed when the Marines invaded. And Manchester, who was part of that, said the only thing that saved any of us was that when we got to the beach, there was a 5-foot-high seawall. Sometimes when you're around the ocean on the beach, they build seawalls to keep the beach from eroding. And there was a 5-foot-high seawall. that those who survived the trip in crawled up and crouched down under. If you looked at your head above it, you wouldn't have a head. The Japanese were there just waiting for anybody to show themselves. And then they started dropping the cannonry down on them. They couldn't stay there. They couldn't move forward. They couldn't stay where they were. And what finally saved them was that somebody found the courage to go over the top. A lot of them tried it. A lot of them were just mowed down. But finally there was someone who said, I can't stay here anymore. I'm going over the top. And they made it. And that encouraged the next guy to go over. And maybe he made it. And before long, the reports that were being sent back by the Marines on the ground was not situation in doubt, which meant we're getting blown apart here. We cannot hold our position. They stopped sending the report situation in doubt and started sending report, we've moved 100 yards inland. And then 200 yards inland. For them to take that island, somebody had to overcome fear. And if fear is paralyzing you, if you find yourself dealing with little faith, Christ on several occasions criticized the disciples for having little faith. How is it that you of all people, he asked them, have no faith? You've got to put your trust in God, and he's given plenty of reasons for you doing that. And then, having dealt with your fear, that takes you to the second step. You're going to stand still. Have you ever been driving somewhere and you realize you're lost? You know what we do when we're out driving and suddenly we realize we're lost, we're not on the right road? You know what we do? We speed up. We drive faster to get back to where we ought to be. And often speeding up just gets us loster quicker. Moses said, having dealt with your fear, you stand still. Stop. And I think in telling them to stand still, when we apply this to us, there are at least three things involved in standing still. Number one, we're going to fall to our knees before God, bowing in worship to Him. Number two, we're going to pray for His guidance. If you lack wisdom, ask of God, who gives to all men liberally. Number three, while we're standing still, we're going to get into His Word, because faith comes how? By hearing, hearing by the Word of God. We're going to open our Bible there on our knees as we're praying to God and find out how God wants us to react in this situation. That's how we're going to occupy our time, standing still. Down on our knees, praying to God, opening our Bible. And then number three. Now, having oriented ourselves to deal with the situation by faith, we're going to see the salvation of the Lord. Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. I don't know if you remember that scene in the Ten Commandments where the Red Sea is parted. But you could see from where the Israelites were on the west side of the sea, you could see all the way through the sea to the other side. But I don't think that's the way it was for the Israelites. I don't think the sea completely parted to where they could see through the whole course of it to the other side. I think what the text indicates is that when they stepped into the sea, they stepped on dry ground. The sea parted enough for them to stand on dry ground. They take a next step, the sea parts again. They stand on dry ground. I think they had to walk across the Red Sea entirely by faith. And remember, we don't live by sight. We don't walk by sight, we walk by faith. Moses endured as seeing him who is invisible. They couldn't see the other end of the Red Sea where they were headed. They could just see the next step in front of them. But by faith, they kept going and going and going until they got to the other side. And they all came out on dry land. They walked by faith through that sea. And God was there for them all the way. Psalm 119, 166, I have hoped for your salvation. And the word hope speaks of a confident expectation that God will keep His promise. Verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. And that's where we're left at the end of this lesson this morning. We, in life, have run up against something that's bigger than we are, that we can't deal with. How are we going to get through it? How are we going to cast that mountain into the sea? Well, we're going to do so by faith. And we're going to go forward. We're going to find out what God wants us to do. We're going to stand still enough to find out what He wants us to do. And having found out what He wants us to do, we're going to do it. And the very thing that became a passage to safety for the Hebrews became an instrument of death for the Egyptians. They were not acting by faith. And the wrath of God visited them when the waters closed back up and they all drowned. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 says that Moses and the Israelites were baptized in the sea. And that's symbolically. They had a mountain of water on one side, they had a mountain of water on the other side, and the cloud that indicated the presence of God was above them. They were completely immersed, completely overwhelmed in it all. That was their baptism. And in the same way, our baptism, where we are completely immersed by faith in obedience to God, trusting in God, when we come out, we find ourselves safely on the other side. And it doesn't matter that you're lost. It doesn't matter how you came to be lost. It doesn't matter how long you've been lost. It doesn't matter why or where you were lost. Christ came to seek and save the lost. And by faith, you and I can all be saved. We can all be saved. And I think that's the great lesson of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29.